Welcome to Discipleship Conversations, a Mission Alive podcast with Jeremy Hoover and Stephen Carazell.
Hello, friends. Welcome to Discipleship Conversations, another episode with Jeremy Hoover and myself. And today we're talking with Tiffany Dahlman again. We talked with her a few episodes ago, and we had intended to get to a topic of the open pulpit, something that she presented on at an event in May and or April. And then we'd hoped to talk about it and in that podcast. And we touched on it, but we ended up talking about some other things that took over that conversation. And so today we wanted to bring her back and talk about the open pulpit. And we had a really good conversation about that. Jeremy, what's something that you heard from Tiffany today that really stuck with you?
I just appreciate the genuineness and thoughtfulness that Tiffany brings to the conversation. Sometimes when people or churches do innovative things, or at least something that looks innovative to somebody looking from the outside, a lot of times it's not examined well. It's not maybe really thought out. The church or the person just, we'll try this because it sounds new and exciting. But what Tiffany shares really comes out of a perspective of thinking about values and how to express those values in different ways in some cases, but in similar ways or in same ways in other cases. And I just really appreciate that about the two conversations that we've had with her. She's very balanced. She's not looking to, you know, push agendas or anything. She's looking to connect with God and to help the church connect with God and then to live that out together. And I really appreciate that about her. I know that doesn't necessarily something I picked up in the interview, but I just enjoyed the conversation and being with her and being able to listen to her talk about her excitement for doing church with the Courtyard Church.
That was really something that stood out to me too. I felt like she is a genuine person, authentic in the way she shared and just opening up her heart to what she desires about ministry. And it gives a ministry a different perspective. I know in ministry, and maybe it's my personality, I think people have certain personalities that make this happen, you feel responsible for carrying things out, for being the person, being the one that people can count on. And that often means something public. And she brings to the table a perspective of a different role of ministry, an important one of equipping, of sitting with people behind the scenes and letting other people speak. But it's not something that everybody sees, but one person experiences at a time, as she talks about what it means to prep somebody, to walk somebody through the process and help them with their teaching, help them with their preaching, help them with sermon formation. And that itself is a value that's really huge for ministry. And I think that the idea of equipping of the saints, we use that phrase a lot, and I don't think we really know what that fully means, or at least we're not willing to step into that in other ways than public speaking. And we often look at it, that's the way we equip people. And so one thing that she brings with the open pulpit is a very personal interaction in the equipping. So not even through a class, but through this personal interaction. And I think that has to do with discipling. We talked about it in the terms of formation and the way it has an impact on somebody in the rest of their life, not just in that moment and for the congregation, but it's something that carries on further with that person. So that's something that really stood out to me. So I'm really excited about what we hear from Tiffany today. And hopefully there's some new ideas and maybe a new vision for what your church may become. And so let's listen to that interview with Tiffany.
Welcome to the show, friends. And today, as we've said, we're visiting with Tiffany Dahlman. And Tiffany, we're glad to have you back on the show with us today. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me back in.
Absolutely. Thank you for joining us. when we talked to you last time, we ended up having a really good conversation, but we had meandered to that conversation off of a topic that we had wanted to talk to you about, and that is the experience of your church in using, just for lack of a better phrase, what we might call a shared pulpit. And I know that you presented this year, or an open pulpit maybe, and I know that you shared on that topic this year at the Pepperdine Lectureships. Maybe you could just start by giving us a brief overview of what you shared there.
Sure. Or I'll at least define what I mean by that term.
Okay.
We do usually use open pulpit, but I have a good friend who does things similarly, and she uses shared pulpit. I've heard both. I think they mean the same thing, shared, open. And I don't know that either of those is a perfect description. I don't know that that book has been written giving this official lingo in the homiletical world, but yeah, open pulpit's usually what we say. And what does distinguish it though, is it's not substitute preaching. I think some people, when they hear open pulpit or shared pulpit, they think, oh, you mean when the preacher calls in sick and the elder pinch hits that Sunday, that's the open pulpit. Like, no, that's a substitute. An open pulpit or shared pulpit church, as I've defined it, this is Tiffany's definition, is a church culture that's radically hospitable to the word of God through the diverse voices within the congregation, preaching in a rotating or regular basis, empowered by the gifting of the Holy Spirit. So for us, that's an actual rotation. It's not Tiffany preaches 90% of the time and other people jump in occasionally. It's as those who are gifted and trained in that feel called into that space, they do. That's the culture of the church, radically hospitable to this this diversity of voice that we have. And there's a lot more in the details of that, but that's the foundation of what we're talking about.
I didn't expect to hear a connection to the value of hospitality when you shared that. Can you flesh out a little more how that value plays in and how you see it maybe playing out as well?
Yes. So I think it goes both ways. It's hospitable to the people who have a gift, say for preaching. There's a whole other debate there, right? On whether preaching is even something that's in the New Testament. Is prophecy the same? Is the exhortation the same? Did we create this preaching thing? And where's the gift of preaching on Paul's list of gifts? You know, all that. I don't even want to get into that. If we just look at speaking gifts, you know, I don't know that we have been hospitable to all people who have been gifted in that way. And if I were to ask even you or anyone else in a church, hey, who in your church has a gift for service? You'd probably list several people for me. In our heritage, who has a gift for leadership? You're definitely going to give me a plural list. That's our thing, you know, plurality of leadership. Who has a gift of song leading? You're going to name 3-4 people. Who has a gift of preaching? You'll probably give me one name. You're a preacher, and you might even suggest they don't have the gift of preaching. They just happen to be your preacher. But you know, one person comes to mind because that's the monopoly of voice. But when Peter tells the churches, use the gifts that you have been given. I mean, it's a command. Use the gifts that you've been commanded to give. I don't know that we've been hospitable to that, to those voices. And then for the members who say don't have that gift, who are receiving this word week after week, I don't know that it's hospitable to them to only hear one voice, the same metaphors, the same lens week after week after week. And that's not a preacher's fault. I mean, I feel like I'm rambling now, but if I were to be preaching, if you were to do a chart, and I actually did this in seminary, I had to do a chart that showed, I used a word cloud. You put in the words of all your sermons and it shows the words that you use the most often, passages you use the most often. And there's definite metaphors and books and symbols and themes that I lean into more than others that will recur in my preaching. And that's true for any preacher. That's just my experience with God is going to come through. Right? That's why we have humans preaching, not robots preaching. But that can be a disservice to the community of faith because they're only hearing that. There's so many other avenues into the Godhead that they miss out on if they're not hearing from other voices.
I think that's right. And I think that's fascinating. I kind of stumbled on that at the previous church I was at when I was preaching every week, and I was teaching at least one class every week. I began to notice that I at least had default books of the Bible that I would go to. Mm-hmm. And I began to wonder about how do I ensure that I'm going in and out of the whole Bible and not just camping out in certain ones. And it was challenging. And I like your idea that sharing or having an open pulpit allows for a diversity, not just of voice, but of experience, mm-hmm. of different people's experience with God, which will come through and will be shaped by different encounters in scripture as well.
Mm-hmm.
When you connect this to hospitality, that says a lot to me about how your church functions. That in a very positive way, that you're looking at underlying values and saying, how do we build around these things that we think are important, rather than let's do what we've always done and hope for the best, hope that these things are coming through. Mm-hmm. How did your church come to a place where you started to think about values and maybe especially with the open pulpit, how you thought about expressing that congregationally?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's two roads into the answer to that, I guess. In seminary, I went to Asbury Theological Seminary in Kentucky, where Christine Pohl, who wrote the book literally on hospitality, was teaching, and it was her last term. Actually, I took her last hospitality course with her, and she just was remarkable. It expanded my mind in that area of hospitality and what it means. There was this great irony there. She would say hospitality is not muffins, meaning, and we think hospitality is just for the older women who invite people over for muffins and tea or something. And she was not a baker. She was not a cook. And we'd come to class and she'd have a box of Cheez-Its and some water on the table. Like, this is as best as I got for you, because that's not hospitality. It's not what we think it is. It's really more of a heart posture. It's Edenic. It's meeting people in threshold spaces. It's providing boundaries, it's abundant provision, it's reciprocal, all these characteristics of hospitality that just really formed my ministry. That was very, very early on in Courtyard when I was finishing up seminary. And because I was so formed by it and learning from her, it became a part of the culture of the church. And we did a huge, maybe 6-month class on hospitality off of that. And our open pulpit came to be sort of what we touched on last time when we spoke. I didn't feel very confident preaching in the very beginning here at Courtyard. I was still angry, at least one of the many emotions going on. Still kind of, hurt from not experiencing hospitality in the church. I didn't trust myself to preach without agenda, to preach without stingers or unfair words. And I just needed time. I just needed time to be before I stepped into that holy space of offering the word of God to the people of God. And so at the time we had a leadership team of 3 and we were on a rotation, and it was really just to prevent agenda, to give it diversity, to not overwork each other. Like you're talking about, Jeremy, it's a lot when you're preaching every week and that pastoral presence and teaching a class, and all these things, is a lot. So it was kind of logistical at first. And we immediately, though, saw the benefit of it for the people, the benefit of that broadened, diverse experience of God through that. And so those two things, I think, came together and we said, hey, let's just make this who we are. We don't need to get by rotating until Tiffany is healed enough with her spiritual director to do this every week. Why in the world would we want to do that? Replacing one old model that didn't work with a new, same old model, different bodied model that doesn't work. Let's just keep this and identify who might have this gift of preaching among us and train them for that and have this be who we are, blending these two ideas together.
That's a great journey and a very attentive one to your own mindset and where you are, and also the ability to resist, you know, just going back to something, you know, to really use that time to think new and to lean into that. We often just want the rubber band to snap back into the things that we're familiar with rather than use those opportunities to rethink what we're doing to begin with. Right. You shared a lot of this, as we kind of alluded at the beginning. You made a presentation in an event at Pepperdine, I think called Harbor, and which is a gathering of people, leaders, church leaders, people interested in learning. And you had a presentation on Open Pulpit with that. Maybe you can share a little bit about your experience with that. What information did you want to highlight for that class, for that presentation? What kind of audience did you find, and what kind of reception did you hear? What's, if anything, has transpired over the months because of that? Can you share a little bit about that experience?
Yeah, it was a pretty diverse group who came in there. Elders, pulpit ministers, church members, sort of curious. And from the questions that they asked me afterward and the comments they had, I don't think they had in mind what these churches look like, because it is a very different culture. I think they still had some of that substitute preaching idea in mind. You know, occasionally some other church leader will preach a sermon that's a quote open pulpit or shared pulpit. And it's more different than that. It's a very, very different culture. And so I was trying to paint that image for them. I did play a video of one, a snippet of a sermon of a younger woman in our congregation who preached her first sermon. And just, it was so powerful. It was one of those where everyone is crying in the congregation. It was just very, very moving. And it was during a series we did on the parables. And that lent itself to Open Pulpit easily. Just logistically, what I'll do is have a Google Doc. We're in the Minor Prophets now. So same thing, this Google Doc of, and for the parables, it was all the parables that we were going to cover. And then those who had gone through this preaching training, which is part of it, it's not why it's open with, what's the right, equipping, I guess, open with equipping. So they've gone through the training, but at that point they sign up for the parable that they want. And she signed up for this discipleship parable that Jesus had about carrying your cross. And it was just so incredible. And it was a sermon, I could have preached the same thing. You know, hey, carry your own cross. Don't try to carry somebody else's cross. It's not your size. It's not for you. You carry the cross that you've been given, and we walk together. But it wouldn't have done what happened when she did it, because it was her, like, her heart sermon. It was the parable that spoke her life and her true experience. And, you know, she looks at that list. For me, it's like Jeremy was talking about before. Oh, here's the parable for the third week of the month. I need to learn this. I would never have touched this, but I got to brush up on it and learn it. But for her, that was the one, you know, the big parable that was her heart. I'd so much rather hear that, even if it's not polished in delivery, even if she's a nervous wreck, even if it's her first sermon. It was so much better, so much more transformative, if that's the purpose of preaching, than anything I could have preached. So I wanted them to visualize that, to really have that vision, and to understand the logistics of how we make that happen, like I said, with some of that training. And I wanted to address the common pushback that you hear from that. Well, you know, well, we hired a preacher, so what are we paying him for now? I wanted to address all of those type of questions.
So how was that received? Was there pushback to your response? You know, you anticipated some pushback with the way you presented. So was there any other pushback from that? People walk away from it really kind of grasping something new?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the only real response, not even pushback, that comes back as, man, I wish my elders would let me do this. I wish we could shift into this. This sounds like something really, really great. I don't think they're going to go for it. And I just encourage them to share that presentation, because a common misconception with a shared or open pulpit is that your hired, quote, pulpit minister doesn't do anything anymore. They're not earning their salary. And that's just not true. There's a lot that is being done. And it's only in maybe some of our much more traditional churches anyway, where the pulpit minister is only pulpit supply. They are typically doing a lot more than that anyway. But even in those pulpit duties, there's a lot that goes on in the week, even in an open pulpit. I'm doing the preaching training for them. I see their outline or their manuscript. I'm on the phone with them, helping them discern their focus and their function. We use Tom Long's language, their focus and function for preaching, to make sure it's clear and not micromanaging or top down, but just, hey, you know, do you think that the church will walk away with one solid truth of God in that, or could it be narrowed down? Ooh, I like that one. Do you think you have 3 or 4 sermons here? Which one is speaking to you the strongest? Just kind of guiding them through the process. Some of our members like to come up during the week and preach it in front of me alone in the church first, because I've never done this before, and it can be very intimidating. And we work on delivery type things. I'm giving them feedback afterward. I'm setting up the schedule. I'm finding the commentary resources for them to use. So, I mean, there's still all sorts of things I'm doing along with teaching the adult Sunday school class and the pastoral duties and all of that. So that's the biggest, I think, misunderstanding about it. And yet for other churches in our day, we can't afford to pay our pulpit preacher a full-time preacher anymore. That's the way of the future. Bivocational ministries coming in. And instead of that causing panic in a church or scrambling to find somebody who's going to do the job for pennies, just embrace something new that isn't second class. It can be just as life-giving, if not more so, than what you had before with one hired pulpit minister.
What, just by any chance, have you heard from anybody over the past few months regarding maybe getting back with you that maybe they've tried that a few times or made any kind of changes?
I haven't. It takes a lot in an established church to completely change that sort of culture. That doesn't mean no one has, you know, but just no one has come back around to me to say, hey, we did this. We totally changed our church culture to one of pulpit hospitality and it's working great. I mean, it is a big shift. And that might be why we see it more in church plants than in established churches. And you know, again, I don't want to speak all. There's tons of churches out there I'm not in the loop on what's going on, but I really pray, really hope that a lot of these churches that are considering closing their doors because they can't afford a pulpit minister don't jump to that, when they could have so many who are gifted for exhortation amongst themselves to keep that life going.
Yeah, perhaps, you know, I think that's maybe a good call for anybody who might be listening right now. If you know of a church that is in that kind of position, that's concerned about their way forward, their ability to pay a preacher, contact Tiffany. Let her give some ideas about what this might look like. How does a church sustain itself? Not that it sustains itself. God sustains the church, but the people are able to contribute to its sustaining effort by contributing to the teaching, the preaching, and the way they gather as a worship time. I think that's maybe a good opportunity for that message to get out, that there are resources to help in such situations. And I think that's a great, an idea or awareness to think that this is not just about someone changing the way they do church traditionally, or even starting a new church, but renewing a church that may see what the alternative, the only alternative is to shut down. Mm-hmm. Is there something new to that? What's the most recent example of a church doing this that you've heard of? Have you heard anything new in the past few months, or anybody taking this on?
No, you know, it is the model of many of the churches that remained online. I was just speaking to a minister who actually is an adjunct of mine in my other hat, the program director hat for ACU. And you know, he's a minister of a church, and they never went back in person. It just worked for them. They started gathering a whole bunch of new members from across the country. And so they're staying online, but then they do a community outreach through like a community meal twice a month or something like that to be together. It was this really great, interesting model, but he was trying to shift this since what was normal was already greatly disrupted. They were trying to shift to have something more open in their virtual meetings. So I've heard examples of that and the whole virtual experience opening space for more voices. For some reason, we were willing to let go of the rules when we were on Zoom more so than we were in a building. And I think that helped.
That's really interesting. I've got a friend up here in Ontario that was experiencing the same thing, that when they were online, for some reason, they had a whole ton of flexibility that revolved around allowing women to do more and more things. But then when they began talking about, we're going to go back to the building, suddenly it seemed like that was, people were less enthusiastic now about retaining what had been done on Zoom. Yeah. And he said to me, what's the difference? If it was a worship service on Zoom, it's a worship service in our building. And I don't understand how you can be okay with it one way, but not the next. So I think, and I want to connect this to, I really like what you said about churches that may feel like their only alternative is to close might become more open to this kind of a concept. I think what that shows is that church might be in a position where they're willing to shift their values, or they're willing to shift the way that they're thinking about things in order just to stay alive at that point. I know for me, in churches where I have preached regularly, there was just always this expectation of a sermon has to be at least 20 minutes, preferably 25 or 30. It needs to be exegetical. It needs to be expository. Mm-hmm. It needs to, you know, do this, that, and the other thing. And there was always this culture of, you know, if somebody said 2 Chronicles chapter 8 and they meant 1 Chronicles, and somebody would have to make sure that they corrected that afterwards from the front. And so there's these weird expectations and ideas I think that people have about, like, in my experience, someone would say to me, I can't preach. I can't come up with 20 minutes of stuff. And I've said, that's okay. Like, I do that. You don't have to do that. And I've tried to call attention to, do you remember when so-and-so shared that really meaningful comment in Bible class a few weeks ago, as a way of, this is what it can look like for somebody to share the word with us. It was an opportunity for somebody to actually share something meaningful in a context that invited it, and people remembered it. It stuck with people.
Mm-hmm.
So what are some ways that you think churches that might be interested in exploring this but aren't fully on board with it can begin to think differently about what the sermon is, or what the sermon time is, or even what the worship event is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an ecclesiology question, isn't it? And systems theory and changing systems and social sciences. There's so much of that in here, though. The social sciences, you talk about going back in the building and muscle memory takes over. And you know, how do you, you know, disrupt and alleviate anxiety, and you know, all of that goes into this conversation, I'm sure, for established churches especially. But there's a diversity there, not only in the content or the experience the preacher has with God, the stories they may go to, the books they may go to, but there's also this diversity in delivery, like you're talking about, Jeremy. I mean, you preach for probably 22 minutes every time. You know, we kind of have our rhythm of how that goes, but someone else may preach for 10, and that's okay. It might be for 31, you know, and that's okay. So that's good, though. And what I tell them is, what you're doing is offering a wager of meaning. That's not my phrase. That's Lucy Rose. I really love Lucy Rose's models of preaching, and she talks about preaching, roundtable preaching, she calls it. She's passed away now, unfortunately, but she wrote this great stuff, just getting going in the field of homiletics, about roundtable preaching and preaching being a wager of meaning. So it's kind of Kradakian in that the authority is in the church. And so that's what I tell them they're doing. You are offering a wager of meaning from the text that is formed through time in prayer, that is informed by engaging conversation partners and reliable sources, by exegeting the congregation. Here's my one wager of meaning. Just say one good thing well. Sometimes it is quite testimonial. Sometimes it is an exposition of the text, but just what's this one big truth of God that you can communicate? And then we meet on Sunday nights on Zoom. We call it Sunday Social, where we offer other wagers of meaning. We can counter that wager or elaborate upon that wager. This is a meaning I got from the text. So it the sermon, you know, volleyball style, sort of, you know, bumps the conversation. And then we really, as a congregation, as a body, get into the conversation together on Sunday nights. And changing that culture, it might be something people need to experience first, because until you realize how much you're missing from the pulpit in both content and delivery, I don't know that they have the motivation to really lean into it and change everything to do it.
Yeah. I like that, what you shared there. It started stirring some thinking for me about what it might look like in a more established church that's probably not going to be open to the open pulpit. Mm-hmm. But how might a preacher in that context begin to think about his or her sermon in a way that can have some more open elements to it, or as you've said, can bump the conversation in the church? Because I think that's, when you shared that was almost the missing piece for me, that so much of what we do, like I've had weeks where I've had to do Sunday morning Bible class, Sunday morning sermon, Sunday evening sermon, and Wednesday night Bible class. Mm-hmm. And they're all disconnected. It's like four totally separate teaching events. Yeah. How might a preacher think about the congregational conversation in a way that, even if they're not able to have an open pulpit, he or she can have maybe a stronger sense of shared conversation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're mentioning expository preaching. This is going to seem like I'm not answering your question, but maybe it'll come back around to it. We'll see. But expository preaching, I hate to use the word allow in anything related to church. Let me think of a better word. Those in the open pulpit do not preach topical sermons. If there is a need for a topical sermon, which sometimes happens in a church, right? Things happen and like, we got to address this. We had a baptism series, for example. If it's a topical sermon, I handle that. The open pulpit, the shared pulpit, does expository preaching. So it begins with the text rather than beginning with the topic, because it's just too dangerous. And that's a big part of it too. You got stressed out preachers preaching something every week, scrambling to get it together. And there's trend topics out there. There's something going on. And if you don't have the time to really do that well, preaching can become dangerous. You know, we all learn that in homiletics 101. You know, preaching can be extremely dangerous and harmful if you're cobbling verses together to put together a conclusion on a topic for them. But when it's expository, so it begins with the text, I think that ironically does open it up to greater conversation, because the conversation is safer. In a topical sermon, you have a preacher who's saying, you know, here's a topic and here's a conclusion. Well, where's the room for conversation in that? And if there is conversation in that, it can quickly become polarized and combative. But if we're saying, here's the text and my one wager of meaning from this text, and it might touch on baptism, say, but that opens it for someone else to come and counter that. But the precedent's already been set that it's going to begin with the text, not with the topic. And that, I think, keeps the conversation rooted where it needs to be and the tone is different often in topical preaching, expository preaching, especially when it's a wager of meaning, heart posture. This is what I humbly offer to you. It's very informed. I believe it's from God. And, you know, I'm not denying any of that, but this is a wager of meaning beginning from the text, and it's open for wise conversation. I think that just sets it up for conversation better than what you sometimes find in churches.
Tiffany, what have you seen what have you seen open up in someone down the road who makes himself vulnerable enough to, you know, to, or opens themselves up to the call of preaching for the first time or a second time? What have you seen that open up in people down the road?
Mm-hmm. Confidence. And the ones who preach, though they may never have shared much in Sunday morning class before, start sharing in class more. They feel more like they're owning that scripture that says you have been made competent as ministers of the new covenant, right? They're like, I can do this by God's equipping through prayer and engagement. I can come up with a solid wager of meaning. I have something to offer the church. My voice matters. So they're more comfortable doing that. They'll offer advice to each other. They speak out more. It's less of just pew sitting, take, receive. And it becomes more communal because we've had a lot of people preach. It's not just like three or four. Like we said last time, I have a high turnover rate here with the military and our international members. But I mean, that's probably a third of the church or more has gone through preaching training and preaches regularly. We've had 16 different preachers in the series on the minor prophets that we've done all within the congregation.
That's a long series for one. And
24 weeks is what we did. 2 weeks. Yeah. On each okay. One.
But that's quite a diverse set of voices to hear. And it's not just a diverse set of voices to hear, but a diverse set of people in which the Spirit of God has entered and activated in a new way that, you know, it's, you've kind of outlined, and I'm sure there's other ways that it's changed them, formed them for other kinds of ministry or in some way down the line in conversations with people. They're equipped to have a conversation with somebody in a way they haven't been equipped before. Mm-hmm. I just see it as a very formational kind of activity that changes the person, and also, it leans into the equipping for ministry beyond what we can see in that moment. That's been really good. I really appreciate being able to get to this topic that we tried to get to the first time, but I'm really glad we were able to talk about the topic we did that first time. So this has been really helpful. And I thank you for spending the time with us on this. We have invited people to get in touch with you if they are interested in this for their church, but also if they know of other churches who might consider this as a way of opening up new life in a church that seems to be dying. Mm-hmm. How would people get a hold of you if they wanted to reach out?
Yeah, through the Courtyard COC website. They can email through there, or you can find me on all sorts of platforms, or ACU. Just type in my name. My email will populate into that space. There have been some who've asked even for those slides that I use for preacher training. And I've sent those. Several people have asked for those, and I email those to them. So the training can even be done for you to equip your church in that. Just reach out.
Very good. Thank you so much for sharing and for offering this perspective and your experience.
You're welcome. Thanks for inviting me in.
Thanks for listening to this discipleship conversation. We invite you to share this episode and tune in next time for another conversation. We also invite you to subscribe and rate the podcast through your favorite podcast app. We'd love to hear from you. Send your comments and questions to media@missionalive.org. Check out the episode show notes and learn more about the podcast and other Mission Alive media resources at missionalive.org/media. Intro and outro music is by audionautics.com. Mission Alive works to bring about the holistic transformation of marginalized communities through starting and renewing innovative churches that address the most challenging issues faced by their neighbors. Learn more about what we do and how to connect at missionalive.org.